Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening.
We have
an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Thank you for joining us for another Anatomy of a Movie. The latest Cold War drama by Steven Spielberg and starring Tom Hanks, Bridge of Spies. And I'm John Comerford alongside Sarah Stretton.
Hello.
And Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
All right, so overall thoughts. Should they have stayed? Should they had the swap? Should they have stayed in prison? What do we think of the movie?
I mean, now that we've entered this, we were just talking a little bit about Tom Hanks, and I've made the decision in my head at the very beginning of the show that I think Tom Hanks is the master of the close-up. But the close-up, like, three-quarter profile.
Oh, he's very good at it.
That shot. Yeah. Like, that is his shot.
He's had years of experience.
Yeah. But this movie, I can't say that, like, I wasn't like, oh, I need to see this movie all the time. Mm-hmm. But for the genre and for the story that I think they were trying to share, I thought they did a really good, clear job. And I think that for this genre of kind of biopic, true story,
esque.
Mm-hmm. Esque. Like it's kind of hard to narrow down, but it is something that has a tendency to have a slower pace. Mm-hmm. It's dealing with spies, but it's not a James Bond action spy. This is the lawyer side of spy work.
It's more of a spy thriller, more of an intellectual thriller.
Yes. And I think that they did a really nice job and got me invested in specifically Tom Hanks's character. And it was thought-provoking about how nations operate, how this situation reflects between the people of both countries. Mm-hmm. I found myself really thinking about the nations individually as I was going. Like, I liked that they didn't – it wasn't just like Tom Hanks is the golden hero from America, which is the perfect country. I really felt like they tried to show
–
yeah, I felt like they tried to show that, like, people are defensive of their own countries, and you can't, and I think that in combination with the time we live in, was just a very thought-provoking and interesting movie to put on film right now, and I think they did a nice job.
Yeah, nice. I found this film very interesting. I personally am not as, you know, in depth with the Cold War and, like, how all the stories that go in that are involved with it. I found it very interesting to find out a real-based story and how they executed it. I think it's good for America to realize all these situations went on, even if it was between two other countries and whatnot. And I found it interesting how we saw how countries treat each other and how they view themselves and how they view other people, but how we find that easy medium in between to mediate with everybody. And I found that fascinating, and it just shows, like, how countries lead up to wars, whether it be, like, a Cold War such as this, or real wars, you know, World War One and Two. And I found it fascinating how countries view each other's and how it leads to certain stories like this. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, Spielberg and Tom Hanks, they're great names. You put them together, they create great content. And it's been a while since we've seen them together, so you know it's going to be a good movie.
Yeah. I this is right up my alley. I love historical dramas, which I consider this, is, you know. Mm-hmm. And granted, it's not documentary, so it's going to take its detours and liberties and all that other stuff. But I love that kind of movie. I like knowing what happened. You know, you get the story that's told to the public. Mm-hmm. Plus, I also like to know, what really went down there. Not that I know that this really went down, but I just like that kind of story. So for me, it lends itself to that. And now I'm even too young for this because this occurred. But I was really fascinated by it, is how is this going to play with a young audience? Were you even aware of Francis Gary Powers? That's not really taught much. In school and everything. Did you guys know the story going in?
No. Like, if you had come up to me on the street, like, before seeing this, I'm like, do you know who this person is?
Yeah, because if you say U2, you guys, yes. you know, the band, you don't know yeah. that it came out, that they U2 took that name
well,
from
I
the plane.
Knew, I did know.
That. You did know that?
But I couldn't have probably yeah. pointed to you what the plane looked like
right.
or exactly what yeah. war it was used in, mm-hmm. but I would know that it was from a war plane. Mm-hmm. Like, that as far as I got. But a lot of these characters' names,
yeah.
no, I did not mm-hmm. have a reference for them before watching this movie.
Right.
I'm also pretty bad at history, so that might be part of it. One of my favorite components of this was learning, just having a visual of kind of the fear and stress that right. was implemented on all sides
yeah.
During this time. And I thought it was really stirring for me personally, just their depiction of a man struggling to do his job, uphold his constitutional values, and in such a way that while putting him in a positive light, I couldn't come out of this and be like, wow, I could be as steadfast as this person. Mm-hmm. Like, they made him feel like a very strong mm-hmm. and centered individual, but it really came how they portrayed it from like an inner strength mm-hmm. that was admirable for me, and I really liked their framing of him. Mm-hmm. And I came out of it just thinking, like, wow, they created a character that I can respect, but I really don't know if I
what
could
I do?
Ever do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's what I think he's particularly, especially this, when yeah. I mean Tom Hanks. I think he's particularly good at playing the everyman or the every person so that you can step into that. And you were talking about that three-quarter shot.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's great. You can see him thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, and that so easily for me, as you're watching that, going, God, what would I do? And I think that's what lends himself to being such a revered actor, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, everybody likes to watch him.
And, yeah, it's that as well, but also I liked how they portrayed all the protagonists
yeah.
and somewhat antagonists in this mm-hmm. film, because in a way they all seem very equal.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had Tom Hanks, who, despised by his own country for what he was standing up for, but then when he went over and the audience went over to the next country and we
yeah.
saw Powers, and he was also American, and everyone despised him in that way.
Which
and even
was
with,
kind of a...
Yeah, it's like
in, true
even
that
with
was, but.
Abel and his country
Abel's, yeah.
not really recognizing him
yeah.
as
and
a certain being. Well, so there was a lot of...
That's what happens
in
the spy
they related to each other.
They put a nice layer mm. on everyone, like outside of Hanks, who I think we all can say praises about. Just the casting of it
yeah.
and the other roles. You looked at Abel and they...
Mark Rylance.
And they... He is a very, in my opinion, sweet-looking man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has a very kind mm-hmm. face. He has very soft, delicate features. He has a very gentle-looking face. Mm-hmm. And they cast him as a... convicted yeah. Russian spy. That's an interesting filter versus where you do get Powers is cast as by far, I thought, the most when you looked at the row of pilots
mm-hmm.
or what he called drivers,
yeah.
he was by far the most clean cut, tall, broad shoulders. But like very, very classic. And then they made him the guy who failed orders.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get like the student who kind of is just a little goofy and like unassuming. And like it was just everyone wasn't like you didn't have the scary looking spy.
I mean, they didn't go stereotypically with
yeah.
their
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. With how they looked, and they, I liked that factor mm-hmm. because I was geared up from the moment like we saw Powers. I was like, oh, they're going to make him into the bright and shining hero
mm-hmm.
by what they've cast him mm-hmm. looking like. And that's not who that character turned out to be. And then when you find someone who is a spy, normally they're, you know, they're kept in shadows and they're more hunched and they're just portrayed as this darker character. And like, he was a very open, statured, sweet-faced looking man.
I thought it was great because you're talking about Abel right now.
Yes,
yeah,
that was Abel.
I thought it was wonderful because he is so unassuming. He's a perfect spy because he would just blend right in. You wouldn't even notice him
mm-hmm.
unless for some reason he'd have to fall on your radar. Because other than that, he blended in the background just like one of his paintings did. So he was great.
Yeah. I think I think they also did that on purpose for casting, yeah. just mm-hmm. to make him more sympathetic so the mm-hmm. audience can feel his side of the story.
And I really liked it because it
worked.
Their casting worked on me. Yeah. Like, it definitely did.
Hey, it helps that he's a really good actor.
Right? Yeah. I mean,
Tony Award winner and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
He's
weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, whatever.
Yeah, he's all right.
But so. I thought that they did a really nice job.
So, but you guys didn't know any of the story. So, now, I was aware of the Francis Cary Power, the YouTube play, and I was very aware of Abel and the whole story. The only person I didn't know in this was Donovan, the lawyer. I was like, oh, that's who it was. I didn't know that's part of the story. So that's why it was so fascinating to me, because that's, mm-hmm. to me, is the story behind it. I knew about the swap. I knew about all that kind of stuff, but did not know who was instrumental in orchestrating it, pardon the pun. Mm-hmm. So that was fascinating. I liked that stuff. And then to learn afterwards what he went on to do with the Bay of Pigs and all that. That's why I love these kinds of movies. I like to know those kinds of stuff. But that's, you know, it's just a geek thing that I like. I don't know if everybody likes that when they go to movies. But I also thought it was fascinating because they portrayed him as a guy who's just this insurance lawyer. I'm talking about Tom Hanks' character, Donovan. He's just this insurance lawyer. But, you know, what they, you know, conveniently left out is that, you know, he worked with the OSS prior to...
How much earlier do we know?
Well, in World War II, as a foreman to the CIA, he was instrumental in the OSS.
So when they're like... So there's a line tucked into the movie where it's like, I haven't dealt with any type of criminal law in a long time.
Yeah, but, there, you know, as they say, he was... Well, obviously, they talked about the Nuremberg, and he was part of the Nuremberg trials, after the Nazi trials after World War II, and he was worked for the judge, and he also presented evidence there. So he had some obvious experience in international affairs, so to speak. But he was former general counsel for the Office of Strategic Services, which is the OSS, which is the forerunner to the CIA. So he had... You know he had some connections in this world, and some you don't get to that level and not have some... But they didn't really go into that. And who knows? Maybe he couldn't because he couldn't express that. So we couldn't know because he couldn't tell it to anybody. But I just find that part of it was interesting because, again, that's a great character. He, on the outside, he's just this, you know, I'm just an insurance lawyer. I mean, come on. I'm just settling claims here.
So. I mean,
I found that fascinating because also Matt Charman, who did the first draft of this film, he did the research and... Like you said, there was footage of Nuremberg and research back to the Holocaust and how Donovan was connected to that, and also which led to just Donovan's person, his being, and then he did all that research and found out that this actually happened with Donovan, and there was a whole negotiation with everything. Which I found fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, jump from negotiating claims to negotiating spies, and then later on prisoners in Bay of Pigs in Cuba and the whole thing, and
it's
then
under
political
wraps.
Prisoners. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's interesting to me, like, for me, going into this, like, you asked, John, what we knew about this story.
Right.
And not only did I not know the names, but I knew, before seeing this movie, I had a very vague outline of what this was. I knew it was someone mediating some sort of transfer. I did not know that he was going to be trying to get two Americans.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about the student. I only knew about Abel.
I had no idea about the student. So when it came down to the script, I was like, who is this person now that we're following? And it was kind of like, it didn't bring me out of the movie, but it was kind of like, am I missing something?
Why did we get the movie?
Is it another spy? Like, I'm very confused. Yeah. But it was entertaining confusion that I thought how they introduced people along the way was very it flowed well, and it was kind of like not light bulb moments, but like switch.
Well, I have to say, since we're talking, let's get deeper into the script a little bit. What I really liked was the way they opened up with Tom Hanks' character, James Donovan. He's just in the bar and they're just negotiating a claim, and he's just doing this thing about, no, it's one for one, it's not one for five, and it's not my guy, it's my client's rep. You know, it's not set up that you just like him right away. At least it's a lot of lawyerese, and you're just going, oh geez, he's negotiating because he's doing his job, which is, I'm trying to, you know, mitigate the claim because I don't want to make five claims. I want, you know, all that, you know, so it's a, but And you see the progression of him in terms of his arc, because by the end of it, it is his guy, so he's learned that, or at least experienced mm-hmm. that. He's no longer. But and then the other part about it is, it's now it's not a one for one; it's a one for two. So you, mm-hmm. he's flipped in that regard and stuff like that. But the one thing that I missed is, it seems like that was more of an intellectual thing than an experiential, innate thing or an inner arc thing. Whereas, because I did this really interesting. Part with the sun and the bomb and, you know, how it affected his kid with the water in the mm-hmm. bathtub. And I was wondering if he was ever going to go down the road of why he was doing this. It went, because it was a very intellectual yeah. pursuit, because it was about the Constitution. And yeah. I loved the arguments that he made in front of the Supreme Court. I thought that was a fabulous
supposedly
argument.
That was drawn from...
Yeah, from right from the excerpts. Mm-hmm. It's not the excerpts, I'm sorry, the transcripts, but mm-hmm. which was a great argument. I thought was terrific. And I wanted to see more of that. It was the only thing I wanted to make this a great movie for me. I wanted to see more of an internal struggle for our main character. Because he had a struggle, obviously, because of all the things that happened mm-hmm. to him. But he didn't really seem to ever waver in his position or his moral fiber. Mm-hmm. He didn't really have any dark night of the soul. It was just kind of like... Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to do this.
He's very steadfast.
Yeah.
Very steadfast.
And it worked. I mean, I'm not saying it didn't work. It worked. It was a good movie. I just, for me, and to elevate it to an even greater mm-hmm. level, I wanted that kind of struggle. I wanted him to second guess himself. I wanted him to not know what was right and to have to make choices and stuff like that. Yeah. Did you guys experience that, feel that, or care?
I understand where you're coming from. And Spielberg also said himself that he had to cut 25 minutes worth of footage of family scenes. Mm-hmm. So we might have had mm-hmm. footage left on the cutting room floor where he had more internal struggle with his family, how it affected them. Because mm-hmm. the audience realized to a certain extent that now he and his family are not affected by all of this. But I'm okay with mm-hmm. how much they cut out, because it was all about the negotiation, not about this family. Mm-hmm. For character building, I get that, because I think he's such a, as you said, steadfast person that mm-hmm. he can't really focus on internal struggle. Mm-hmm. He has to focus on, you know, doing this for mm-hmm. his country and doing this to, you know, figure out everything.
Yeah, but that's what I think would be great. That's what makes great drama, is when you have to focus on this, but when this is happening underneath and you mm-hmm. you have to reconcile those things, that makes great drama.
I think that for me, just watching this movie once, I felt like his family did fall off for a majority of the third mm-hmm. act, and I could have probably used a little bit more of them, but it didn't really bother me, because I did like how they came full circle on a lot of the other dialogue and mm-hmm. imagery. So it held up enough that it did circle back to the 1-5, the 1-2, yeah. to the standing man remark by yeah, April, to absolutely. Him standing on the bridge.
I mean, so much
bridge.
Of it paid off
like,
nicely.
So
yeah.
much of it, yeah. for me, paid off within the deal relationship mm-hmm. That I wasn't searching for more payoff, versus like sometimes when you get to the end of the movie, you're like, why did none of these pay off, and you're just listing them.
Yeah,
I was at least adding up the things were paying off that didn't.
I think the reason why I make the comment is because mm-hmm. I agree with you that all so much of it paid off, so much of it worked and everything. I'm going, okay, well, it was a good movie for me. What would have made it a great movie? And that was the only yeah. thing that I could think of, is that for me was it would have been more interesting, more layered, more textured if we had that internal thing going on where he had to come to some sort of
yeah.
realizations about himself that he didn't know.
Well, the weirdest one for me was not even actually as much family. It was family scenes. Was I want to say his name was Dougie.
Yeah, it was his
assistant,
yeah.
his aide, who seemed to kind of have some sort of sexual
he's
tension
his
with
his dating his
daughter.
Girlfriend. Not his, right.
With
he's
his
dating
daughter.
His daughter.
He's dating his daughter. Yeah. There was something there that yeah. they put in the beginning that I didn't see. And then Dougie's mentioned yeah. while he's
right.
in mm-hmm. Germany. He references the Dougies the same age.
Yeah.
So I was waiting kind of for that
yeah.
payoff, because that one really, to me, did not exist.
I know, but I really liked it. I have to say, I like it for these reasons. One, for me, it was clear that his daughter, Dougie, was dating his daughter, and the mm-hmm. reason why he has to work late, he says, no, you have to work late, and it's because he doesn't
that
want to. Yeah. And then he's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because he's just messing with him. He's
yeah.
like, you're going to date my daughter, you're going to pay for it. And some degree. Because that's
yeah.
what I
was good.
Totally understand that.
Exactly, and I really liked
yeah.
it, which is why that was one of the only ones
yeah.
that
I
wanted to see.
It.
I wasn't as connected with his wife, so I felt like her
yeah.
watching him was completely fine.
Mm-hmm.
The I think that some sort of reference to his daughter and Dougie together would have summed up a little bit more for me. Yeah. But Marissa, you mentioned that.
Understand why when he says he's the same age as Dougie. I get that's why Pryor is so important. Is that I'm going to mess with the guy because he's dating my daughter because I have every right to. But in the end, I wouldn't want my daughter to have to suffer this if it was Dougie stuck there. Because Dougie's just representative of somebody that won't that girlfriend is his daughter to some degree. That
You mean the German girl that we never got to see again?
Exactly. So, but I understand. So for me, that motivation was there in that work. Yeah. Anyway,
I completely agree. I think we saw enough family to realize that yes, the country is they're the least favorite family right now. But I liked how the movie came full circle, especially the scene when he's on the train and. The first time he's reading the newspaper and people are looking at him like, why are you representing this man?
How could you possibly?
And then after the whole negotiation goes down and then they're back on the train now looking at him in a positive light.
Yeah.
Like, I like how it circled around to that. And even with the family, because the family didn't realize what was going on.
They're not even paying attention. Does anybody care that I'm not even home?
Yeah, and when they find that out on TV and they realize their father was a part of all of this, they're like, okay.
That was a good moment.
So they had So even with the family and the country, now seeing Donovan in a positive light, I like that whole.
Absolutely.
I kind of have an outside of Bridge of Spies question.
Okay.
It's more of just like a film in general question for you guys. Because we mentioned his family and there's the scene where his daughter's watching TV and the bullets fly through the window.
Right,
And for me, I was just wondering if this happens to anyone else. But I, in film, that is... not an uncommon sequence.
Right.
Like we've seen it before.
People drive-bys
with, you know, the bullets fly through the window, people are ducking on the ground. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's just because I've watched so many movies, but it's starting to like, sometimes it layers on my experience where like the emotions, for instance, one of the more recent films that I've also seen with this in it was like Selma. Selma has a shooting scene. And I got very emotional when it happened in Selma. And I like, as soon as it was happening in this movie, I started feeling like my Selma feelings. And it just starts kind of like when I see mirroring scenes or scenarios, like, it's kind of like the emotions just feel like they're stacking. So like 5 movies from now, when I see another scene, I feel like I'm just going to be bawling. Like this, the moment the bullets come through.
I don't know.
Because like the impacts of other movies are starting to like impact the movies I'm watching.
Yeah, I have to say though, you know what it did for me, honestly? As I'm watching and then the bullets come out, really? They're going to do a drive-by? For me, it took me out just a little bit because I was about ready to... throw out the plausibility, implausibility flag, because I just went, I'm not sure that really happened. It seems...
Actually, it did.
Did it?
Spielberg, you know, said in an interview that the daughter actually spoke out, the real-life daughter spoke out, and she said that there was a drive-by, but there was only 1 to 2 bullets, and one just barely missed her. But, of course, in Spielberg and Hollywood fashion, you have to add a few more bullets to, like, really get that impact.
I'm glad I didn't pull the flag, then. I didn't pull the flag.
It did happen, but in this film, they portrayed it way more dramatically.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. But it was getting... I was like, I need to isolate my movies. My movie emotions.
We also talked about the train. I thought the callback to the other train is a very good one. He's in East Germany. He's in the train and he sees that. Now, I don't know if he actually saw the people trying to climb over and them getting shot down. I'm probably writer, taking license. But I don't care. I thought it was effective. And even if he didn't see it, happened. So that was a real event and things like that happened a lot. And I just like the mirror when they come back and he's after they've seen him on the train and they're looking at him differently. He looks out the window and he sees the neighborhood in juxtaposition to what he saw over there when it was all just in decay and, you know, bombed out. And then the kids up another fence that weren't getting shot. I mean, that to me was just effective.
It was a very nice visual.
It was very effective. And Spielberg said in an interview, there is a train that would go from both countries back and forth that U.S. citizens would have a pass to get on both sides. And that train, you can see throughout the windows, like the borderline of what, like, the environment looked like. So it was based off of that.
Yeah, it was just dramatic. It's just like,
I loved it. Crazy. I loved that juxtaposition.
Because,
It was a great visual. I thought some of the visuals were really, really nice in this. Also, he had a there was a way of filming with color in this film that I really noticed, where there was almost seconds where I was like, is this in black and white? And then it would change because there was pops of color throughout. But the way they, like, especially during the exchange scene mm-hmm. on the bridge, the way they lit the sky, they isolated the bridge. So it was just like one thing. It just felt like it was standing amid blackness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how it was so white, gray, black with just these little spots of like brown and blue. Yeah. And I was like, this looks really nice. And it's not, it doesn't feel like a filter or super stylized. It feels natural, but but looking at it as just one frame, it seems very much
Stark black and white. Some of the compositions, even that end shot where you see the bridge from that angle, a high angle, and he's just in this little lone figure on the bridge standing amongst all the trusses and everything like that. It's like, and they shot at the real bridge where the Bridge of Spies, which is great. I didn't know that when I saw it, but after reading research on it, that was
terrific. Yeah, they did a lot in Blanicky location. And they filmed in Poland to try and get the look, I believe, of East Germany. They also filmed supposedly in a lot of the actual West locations, buildings that were used during the time.
Yeah.
I think that all fit it very well. I thought the look of it
was amazing.
Very dramatic.
And then I saw the budget was $40 million.
Yeah,
I mean, Spielberg.
It's like, but how the hell? I mean, because it looks, first amazing. Of all, it does not look like it. I mean, these days, $40 million is nothing. And it looked like, because there were, you know, a lot of different locations, a lot of work, production design, etc. And I'm going, really?
I mean, it's period. $40 million? They have to do everything. Yeah.
And they had a plane sit-down scene and all that.
Yeah.
Weren't you shocked?
Yes.
Because I thought at least 80.
Yes, and as you said, like, with the planes, plane with, with the hangar sequences, with the flying sequences, with all of that, and having everything in
Spielberg.
Period. It was, it was great.
Wow.
It was interesting, and he used some interesting transitions as well, like, where you would get one of the ones I remember most clearly, where I believe he was speaking to the jury, and then the review is of Classroom of Kids.
Right,
all singing the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah. Like, oh, just the paper going up and then coming down. I mean, they're great. A lot of really good transitions.
Really nice
transitions. And a lot of good editing. Composition shots as well.
Yeah.
Spielberg also said he purposely set up a lot of conversation shots in one shot. Where there was that one scene when Donovan was first meeting Abel, and they're just sitting there on the table, like at both ends. But he set up the camera wide, so you just see it, and he allowed the audience to pick whoever they want
to pay attention to.
Yeah. So, and we saw a lot of those shots. And
we did see a lot. We also saw a lot of the push-ins.
Yeah.
A lot of those. It's like, why are we doing so many of those?
So a lot of it's like, wide shots.
Sometimes feel like I'm in a fisheye with the doors bubbling out at me.
Makes
but
the
I'll
film
take it.
Grander in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. I think it really think it came across really well. It's the funniest thing about it for me, though, is that I think there'll be, when I look back at this, you do get the message of the story and the results, but I think that I will forget a lot of the scenes.
What do you mean? Expand on that.
Like, for instance, I'm going to get it wrong.
That's right. We'll correct it.
German, what they called themselves.
GDR?
GDR, but what's the full? Yeah.
The German Democratic
Republic. That, but their representative.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay,
their representative. Although I liked his speeding kind of car scene, like a lot of his information and scenes, I didn't really stick with me as clearly.
Well, the part that I thought was fascinating about that is they were so desperate to get on the stage to be part of the war, because here they get taken over by the Russians. They go, oh, wait a minute, we're our own people.
And we're going to use some random woman and her daughter.
Exactly.
Like, very strange.
But I like that. And then even at the end when they release Pryor and they go, and it looks like he's going to shake his hand and he goes right by. I mean, that was a terrific little moment after the end there.
Also
like,
very
you still
rude.
Aren't somebody
also very rude.
Very rude.
Very rude.
Very American.
I was like, bad Americans. Shake his hand. But, he just gave you someone.
We didn't want to put him on the stage. So I liked that part of it. I thought it was hysterical.
Yeah. But I think it allowed the audience to be like, yes, we can negotiate with each other, but we still don't like each other.
Mm-hmm. And all that stuff I found fascinating. What you can say, what you can't say, what you have to read between the lines. It's like, God, how annoying. I could never do that because it was just ridiculous and posturing and just nonsense. I don't know how they do it. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to sit through that. would just drive me crazy.
I would doom the country. Doom. I also, in very constantly, they were like, you had the representative of, I don't know, the CIA, being like, just take powers. Dulles. Just take powers. I'd been like, okay.
Oh, that guy, Huffman.
Yeah, I would just be like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a horrible person.
Yeah.
But
that was such a great payoff to stand there on the bridge and be the stoic man, standing man, whatever it is.
It was wonderful. And
wonderful.
It
was great.
It was a great character and great story. And I'm glad that they were in that position and I was not put in that position because it wouldn't have gone as well.
Yeah. You wouldn't have been the standing, you'd have been the falling woman. It's like, yeah, whatever, caving. Yeah,
like, oops.
Yeah, whatever.
Sorry. I like the amount of time that they let that play out, though.
Because mm-hmm.
They made it feel very real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's going to happen? They built that suspense just enough.
And it was really interesting because along the way, obviously, James Donovan was a very skilled negotiator and plays poker well. He knew all along. They're just waiting to see if we'll, flinch.
And who makes the first move?
Exactly. And I'm just going, I guess he just does it. He just knows. But that part I was going, you could make it a little harder for him. Because it was just so
easy.
But
there wasn't enough mudslinging before that?
No.
Not enough. Not
I mean, the only thing, I'm just going back to, because I thought it was great that his own family was like, he's calling home and they're not even interested. And he has because that's very, things haven't changed in 50 odd years because that's where, whatever.
Nobody cares.
And he's doing this fabulous thing that he can't tell anybody about, can't speak to. And he's standing up for his principles and his own family is like, couldn't care.
It's like, please stop getting a shot.
Exactly.
Shot at. Whatever. We don't like this. Mm-hmm. No, I thought it was there were some slight moments where I felt like this was long, but I think for the most part, it was very easy to get through, very easy to understand which side people were on, what he was fighting for, and that he was kind of the person who was standing.
Well, the structure to the first half, the first hour is all about Abel and the legal coverage and his trial.
Yeah.
And then at the hour mark, we're switching to the other mark.
And I liked it. I really liked it. It does feel definitely like this is part A and this is part B. They need each other.
Yeah,
it worked in one movie. Like I'm glad that they pushed them together, and it wasn't like, okay, we're going to do one movie about just the lawsuit, and then we're going to do another movie about the sequel.
Did they lose you in any of that procedural stuff or the legal stuff?
Honestly,
the warrant
they did
list,
for me. I checked out maybe about 5 minutes.
See, now I'm fascinated by that as a geek because I'm going, wait a minute, you can't do that. There's no warrant there to search. That's tainted fruit and all that.
Yes, that
I love
made me
that.
Really angry.
Yeah.
Really
and
upset.
That's why I thought the argument was great. It's like, no, that's who we are. That's the whole argument here. The whole our way of life and our way. If we're not a country of laws that apply to everybody, then we aren't what we think we are. And then, therefore, how can we claim to have a moral high ground?
It was I like the American principle of that because they are representing America. So I did like that aspect to bring it into just the humane level that other countries don't reach. Can't get
and
to
even
that
the
point.
Judge is like, hey, look, this is all for show. He's guilty. I'm just going,
it's
so blatant?
You're like, why are we so
horrible? You're the judge.
Yeah. Stop.
You are the judge.
Don't do that.
There's not even a semblance of fairness.
Yeah.
It's a biased opinion.
I thought it was really interesting how they portrayed all of Tom Hanks' decision making and how he handled people very blatantly putting up walls of you're not going to win.
Especially the first time he meets Huffman. I thought that was great.
And as you said, his argument, it wasn't so often, I feel like when I watch lore movies are out there, it's like you attack them.
Yeah.
You use the media to attack, to fight back, to show that people are wrongdoing you. And he used logical constitutional argument. Yeah. Like when they would reference what he said in the media, it would be like, oh, he was tired. Oh, it was great. But he was he never went and badmouthed any of the judges for standing in his way. He didn't badmouth the CIA for standing in his way or for obstructing justice. He kind of just
somehow figured out how to go around it.
And I thought that was
very
interesting.
Really,
can you imagine
the
story in today's society with social media?
Oh, my God.
It would blow up.
Judges just...
Oh my God! Yeah.
I mean, but things do happen.
The family would get destroyed.
I mean, things do happen. Like there is, there's a couple articles. I'm forgetting the woman's name, but there's a woman who is very well known, or mostly does cases for either like serial killers or very violent acts, or sometimes people who do acts of like terror. She was the lawyer, the defense attorney for the Boston bomber, and she's also done like people who've people that
horrible,
the media the media and everyone is already against, and this woman who's an American citizen goes and defends them, and she's like written articles, and it's like she does interviews, and it's just about she has to stand up for the law because that is what she represents, and if you're going to have any law, then everyone has to have this equal opportunity for it. And I felt like she's like very much the modern day of what he did, and it's just it's a very rough position to be in because people don't want you to succeed in a way at your job. It's hard.
Now, speaking kind of tangentially about that, what did you think of Donovan's character, Donovan's argument to Huffman in the bar where he says, you know, you're German, I'm Irish, but here's what makes us American, it's the Constitution. So don't tell me there's not a difference. So didn't you think that crystallized everything?
I thought it was great because it put them on an equal playing field and to a point where everyone can understand one perspective. If you have all these certain views and values and you grew up with two different sides, is you have to find that one middle viewpoint that everyone can agree on and go off of that.
I don't know who wrote that, if that was Chapman or if that was one of the Coen brothers or if they shared all that, but those are the ones who are credited with the script, which was, I did not know going in that Joel and Ethan Coen also were
they did
credited
the subsequent
this. Yeah, they did the revision on Chapman's original script. But I can't tell what one person. You know, somebody was saying, "Well, you can tell where Joel and Ethan Coen." It's like, where? I couldn't see that.
And I thought their dialogue was really strong.
Yeah.
I was very interested, though. I think maybe it's because it's such a prominent argument today, where money didn't get brought in to this at all. I say that because I was waiting kind of for the argument of, this trial is costing the American people $10 million for you to defend someone who's not an American. You're using taxpayer. Because that is so often, I feel like, used
today's society.
In today's society. And, like, how much trials cost and how much lawyers cost, especially if the plaintiff is using someone appointed by the state or whatnot. Right. Like, that always typically comes into play about what money does to the legal system, what money does to having
but
cops on trial.
But they didn't use that. But how about the argument that Alan Alda, his colleague and partner, made against him? And, you know, he's in the middle. Donovan, his wife's actually echoing his boss's – not his boss, but his partner's argument. I'm just going, man, poor guy. He can't get
– And the subtleties of, like, when he gets kicked off of his own cases comes back.
Yeah, that was nice.
I was like –
And for doing what they asked him to do. But that's what I loved. Everybody was doing what their country asked them to do. Abel was doing exactly what his country asked him to do. Donovan was doing it to the best of his ability, which is what his country asked of him. Even Francis Gary Parris. Now, I don't know what really happened in the plane, but the way they depicted it, you know, the fact that he tried to eject, tried to, you know, do this destruct button and all that other stuff, I found that incredibly engaging. And, you know, I thought it was tense. It was just... I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's what happened because it looked fabulous.
I found that interesting, especially during interviews and whatnot. They said that Gary, the real powers, the whole country was more upset at the fact that he didn't kill himself.
Right.
Because we saw that line, this is what we will give you, that little pin. Mm-hmm. And he purposely didn't use it. So the whole country was upset that he didn't follow American orders. And now, because of that, everyone's suffering the aftermath and trying to get him.
Except he didn't give up anything. At least I've never read anything that he gave up any information.
He didn't.
So.
But it was more so he didn't follow direct orders.
Right.
And now
they even said, we can't give you the direct order to use it. They specifically said, we can't direct the order to you. But if you get caught, do this. But we can't.
Tell you to do
it. Yeah, I can't tell you to do it.
But
that's why you have it. Use
you should have.
Yeah. I also thought it was interesting. They both had coin, the whole coin, the hollow nickel, and then the silver dollar. It's like there's just a nice little
very nice
thing going
on
there.
Also, the fact they used the hollow nickel, which is
that's a true thing
used in or being caught being used by spies. I thought that was an interesting tidbit to put in there.
Yeah.
That the note was coded in a similar way. I thought all that was like, oh, that's
an
interesting.
The tradecraft is great. I like that
fact point because that was information I didn't know. Mm-hmm. That they could have very easily gotten away with not having. And I thought it was a nice attention to detail this film had.
I think so too. I love the YouTube playing because they said they used an authentic YouTube plane that
they
was
did,
it, it was a retired YouTube plane, but at
and
this
they
point,
crashed it.
Yeah, at this point, it was actually painted black. That they had it in like a museum and whatnot for display, but at this point, it was painted black, and they didn't have the budget to paint it silver, which the original YouTubes were actually painted silver.
Is that right? Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Because you'd think it would be painted black, but
really,
in the sky,
I thought
that they
would be painted silver. I remember, because I was looking at it, and I was like, why is this painted black?
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to fly it
at night.
But they don't fly at night because
they're
taking photos. So I was like, why would, in my head, I didn't go to silver. I was like, why don't you paint it, like, blue? Why is it not blending in?
Yeah.
Like, why would you paint it black?
But I like
the
authenticity.
Didn't you find the whole plane crash exciting? I thought that was great.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It was funny because for the plane crash sequence, the powers that Austin Stoll, who plays, you know, Powers, he did had no flight training sequence in order, or flight training in that sense. He was just put in a rig and they pretty
just
much like threw him around.
Did he have any crash training?
There was no training whatsoever in
there. Some Advil before you take this.
Right?
Do this
so,
scene, please.
That's how they filmed it. They just put him in a chair and set him up in a rig and tossed him around.
I thought it looked really nice.
It looked
really
nice. I would not have known.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, well, we've talked script and story. I think we really, all of us really enjoyed it. I thought that, you know, I mean, I don't know what else to say about it other than what we've talked about. But we talked a little bit about the director, but what do we think? What else can we say? How many superlatives are there for his?
It's been
that kind of a movie for $40 million to me was just amazing.
For that type of movie, it's also, I mean, if I'm correct, he hasn't directed. This is the first movie he's directed in like 3 years. Which the
last one was Lincoln?
Yeah, for Steven Spielberg. I think that when it comes to introduction of storylines, blending the United States part versus him going overseas, I thought that was all done really well. Loved his transitions, editing,
great.
Ideas, focusing on characters, like. I thought he just did a really good job.
I like one of the things he does a lot, and I enjoyed it for most of them that he did, when he would show you like the kids pledging lands, and he just slowly pulls back, and then the flag just kind of comes into frame. Just little things like that.
He always says, it's like, oh, here's what you think you need, but guess what? I can
give you
a little more. Like, just look into the production detail for a second more, and I'll show you something else. Good job. Like, it's like, I'm just going to guide you around. Just trust me.
I think there were some great scenes that really built up suspense, especially when we see Donovan walking through the streets. He finally gets into Berlin, and we see
the thugs
on the street.
The Utes.
And Spielberg purposely didn't put subtitles during that scene because he wanted the audience to feel as lost as Donovan was. And then we can figure out by physical gestures what's going on.
I didn't need any of them. I thought that was somebody complained about it. I said, why would you need them? You wouldn't need, you know exactly what's happening in every scene. You don't need the subtitles.
I think there was
the whole line
that there are, be careful where you walk, there are gangs, and there's already negative
connotation. Who didn't know? As soon as you saw the open on the shot, you see a bunch of teenagers hanging on a corner. You're going, hey, that's trouble right there.
No, he's going to get away fine.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just going to say hello.
Yeah.
And he's going to keep on going.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there were a lot of scenes that built up the suspense in a great
way. I wonder, though, I'm sure some of those liberties are granted, though, because of who you are. Like, if you're just like, no, I don't want subtitles.
Yeah.
No. They're like, okay.
There's a lot of authenticity.
If you say it's going to work best without subtitles, I kind of want subtitles.
Yeah.
Like, I think that...
But
if they
were extended scenes that needed explanation or, you know, but they just, you just didn't. I mean, why would anybody care? I don't need to know what they're saying. If you know what's going on in the scene, you just don't.
Because some people want it to be crystal clear at every single moment. Because the whole audience has to grasp every single detail, John. This is mass marketability.
That's very true.
You're right about that.
And also, Tom Hanks found out, I mean, he did the research, that Donovan was actually sick throughout this whole negotiation.
Was that right? See, because why did they put the cold thing in there? Is it because it really happened, or because did Tom get a cold on while they were filming?
Let's make it work. Because during the whole plane trip over to where he was going, because the high altitude and all the
cold.
All the cold, he actually physically got sick throughout this whole
negotiation. I thought it was like a shtick.
I thought it was a shtick, but I thought it was a playoff of Abel, because Abel was, you know.
Apparently it happened in real life.
I thought it was like a shtick. Like, I'm sick, I gotta go.
Yeah, exactly.
When people are like, I'm drunk, I can't remember. Yeah. Like, it's just like,
you should put on a
say.
Coat.
Yeah, put on a coat. Yeah.
And that building that they were in, like that housing unit that they were in.
Where you had to stay?
Where you had to stay.
Crap hole you had to stay in.
And then the other guy had to stay at the Hilton.
They looked so similar to Abel's place.
Yeah.
Like the coloring, the wallpaper, really similar between where he was staying and where Abel's apartment was in the United States.
Brooklyn.
I think it was in Brooklyn.
I forgot. It was in New York somewhere.
Yeah, but like very similar colors, like both like the metal wrought iron beds. Like to me, it echoed each other. And I was like, interesting.
No, I think it felt like that was very specific. It felt like they were trying to make the connection between these two guys who have completely strong ideals about their countries and what they stand up for and how they are going to be the standing man.
And how they're treated
either sides
on the other
of that
places.
Iron curtain. And so I thought that was nice.
I liked it. And then I did so much research on this film.
Okay,
there were so many little details that you'd never noticed. Because, you know, Spielberg is really big into, like, practical effects and whatnot. Mm-hmm. The scene when they're in the house and you saw the breath from Donovan, that was actually real. But when you set up lights during production,
it gets hot.
Air goes away and you can't see it. So what they did, they had a bunch of stand-in actors behind them cloaked in black. And during that line, they would breathe all at once, and you have like multiple breath layers upon
each
other.
You're kidding me.
I kid you not. I found that fascinating.
Wow.
I think it's fascinating, but it also really grossed me out.
The details just to get breath.
Like everyone, just breathe. Like all behind. Like
it's used to do special effects because, you know, it's always hard to do like air and moisture in that way, so they had
it's easy to do this.
They had multiple actors breathing.
It worked.
To get that effect.
Wow.
I mean, that's great and brilliant, and like you pulled it off fantastically.
I didn't know for sure.
But that is so weird. Like, ew. So much air particles.
I found it fascinating.
That is fascinating. I find that incredibly fascinating. That's terrific.
Film solutions.
Yeah. I mean, practical is probably a lot cheaper in the long run.
Gotta give it to Spielberg.
Yep. That's why it's $40 million. All right. So I want to talk about actors. So we've already talked to Tom. I mean, again, he's like, what is he? I thought he just... You just, for whatever reason, for me anyway, I'm willing to watch him and go along a story with whatever it is.
Yep.
I don't...
Seriously.
It's just like, okay. Like... You're great. I'll watch you again.
So
fantastic,
like,
Tom.
All right. Yeah.
I mean, it's great. And then Spielberg and Tom Hanks, they're both amazing on their own accord. And then you put them together, you know it's going to be a really strong, very character-driven, story-driven film.
But I think obviously the surprise for everybody is Mark Rylance, because not many people know about him. And those who do, it's no surprise because they've seen his ability and his talent everywhere, especially in Wolf Hall these days. Mm-hmm. But on you know, obviously in Broadway. But it's a surprise to most people because they don't see him in film, and here he comes and he's holding his own and doing very well in the scenes and just compelling in a very quiet, small way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very sweet way. Yeah. I thought everyone really held their own in this, like, who was put in that position. Mm-hmm.
I liked Amy Ryan. I thought she did a great job as his wife.
Yeah.
She had some nice moments.
I thought that she was going to at some point like kind of snap at someone. I was like, oh, nope.
And that might have been part of the stuff that was cut, but okay. I thought the argument that she had with siding with Alan Alda against her, I thought that was just great. I was not expecting her to side. Mm-hmm. It's like, what, in front of somebody? You know? Mm-hmm. And just the look she gave when, after the shooting and the kids are all, hanging on to mom and stuff like that, and she's just looking at him saying, and I'm going, yeah, you did this.
You're in trouble.
You are the reason.
Yeah, I'm not casting.
Yeah.
Very well. I love that. Can we talk a little bit about the sound production and whatnot?
Sure.
In the film? Because the whole New York sequence when the spies are following, they're following Abel during that, they were actually planning to have a music track underneath, but they realized all the raw sounds from New York, like the subway and noises, like the walking, just everything. Mm-hmm. They realized that was so strong enough. That's a character in itself, and they stripped it. And so the first,
it's just all practical sound.
Yeah, the first 10 minutes of New York is literally all the sounds.
It started very quiet.
Yeah,
this film had a very, very quiet opening.
Oh, that was great too, because he's painting himself. You've got him, you've got his reflection, you've got the
and
painting.
That
who
came
is
full
he?
Circle.
Yeah.
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 You know, I like that one too. Came full circle.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a few.
Yeah, it was true.
Well, there's a lot. There's
And Spielberg said that the first noticeable sound of music in this film was like maybe 35 or somewhere in the 20-minute range where he's walking down the street in the rain. Mm-hmm. We have the guy following him. That's the only time where you're building suspense and having music in, which I found fascinating.
I didn't notice that.
I didn't realize it took that long to have music.
Yeah, no, that's surprising.
But also another surprising thing, John Williams didn't compose the music for this film.
Not since Color Purple.
Yeah.
He's done
which
all
was
himself.
In...
1985.
Yeah. They've done every movie, he's done every one of Spielberg's movies except for this one.
Yeah. Well, the interesting...
since Color Purple.
Yeah. The interesting thing was John Williams, he obviously was originally asked to do it, but earlier in the year, he was going through...
Medical problems.
He had to have a pacemaker put in, so he had to graciously turn that down because his doctor said, can't do work. So they actually asked Thomas Newman, who there's a whole family related story to this of why Thomas Newman came in film, because Thomas's father, Albert, he was the director of music for Fox, I believe. Back in the day, he was the head of department, and it was his son, and he... Oh, sorry. The father was, like, good friends with John Williams when he was young. And when John was, like, growing up and always... Yeah. And his father gave John Williams a chance to compose. And then it kind of came full circle. John was like, let's have Albert's son compose. And so it's a family related
thing. I made you famous and you got all these movies.
Is he related to Randy? Aren't they cousins or something like that? I had heard that. I don't know if
cousins,
I can't confirm it.
But yeah, it was the Alfred Newman, not Albert. Alfred Newman helped give John Williams when he was younger a chance at composing, and then now John Williams, as amazing
his son
as he
a chance.
Gave Alfred's son a chance.
The interconnected.
It's a family related
interconnectedness.
I found that of Hollywood. I found that great.
Well, I think he did a nice job.
Yeah,
he did a nice job. I didn't. I remember watching the movie and being like, "Oh, this is a really nice piece of scoring," and then, but it's kind of. It doesn't have a sig. This isn't the type of movie that needs a signature piece, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, it's not like it's a taut, tense thriller. I mean, it's a thriller, but it's more of a, like I said, it's an intellectual thriller. So it's not like dun, 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 dun. It's not that driving kind of.
And there's a lot of almost classical sounding music, which is, I think, does evoke a more intellectual environment when you do have the more. Symphonic piano, whatnot going on.
Orchestra. There was only 35 minutes of music in this film. So, good. That's what why John Williams was like, it's a small amount of music. So, not in a negative way, but like it wasn't like a whole lot of music. So, they're like,
we didn't need
Thomas
an anthem.
Can do this.
No.
They only trust each other.
but Spielberg and John Williams will pair up again for Spielberg's next film, The Big Friendly Giant.
Yeah.
Don't worry. That relationship is not over.
I'm excited for
the. Nor is the relationship with the DP because same DP.
Yeah, same. Always.
You know, It's just one happy family.
I found that fascinating. It was a family affair.
Yeah.
How much money is this puppy making?
Well, thanks for bringing that up. It was projected to do about 15 to 20 million on its opening weekend. It ended up doing 15 and a half. Mm-hmm. So it's not its projection. And it came in third behind Goosebumps and the third week of The Martian.
I don't know what you're referencing when you look at me that way.
But doing okay based on the amount of theaters and everything like that.
I think a lot of people were surprised it opened up so low because Spielberg and Hanks.
I don't know why anybody. Except that this kind of movie is like, I wasn't surprised by it. Were you guys surprised that it was?
I was a little bit surprised. I figured maybe around 20.
I was surprised by Goosebumps, not by The Martian, because I thought The Martian, I think everybody's really enjoying that and going back to see it. But
I was more surprised at how the lower amount that it was. Because even Terminal, the last film together, opened up at like 19 million. Mm-hmm. And this was still a good amount lower than that.
I almost feel like as if this movie was released at a different time of year, it could have made more money.
Really? Because it just feels it's a November kind of movie.
Christmas time.
But I don't know. Just with what it's been surrounded by, like The Martian and, I don't know, Everest and the... Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think that... And people are getting more excited for what's coming.
Yeah.
In November and December, like, I feel like people's energy is going up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was just how it was marketed, but, like, I was interested in seeing it because of the parties involved. But it was an intellectual interest versus, like, I'm really excited for this, which I think is the difference between 15 and 20 million.
That's why I'm saying I'm not surprised by its opening, and I don't think there's anything wrong with its opening, because it's not one of those that's going to have a huge draw. I just don't think it is. Even if you've got Spielberg and you've got Hanks, which is a huge draw, for the kind of movie, I just don't see it being a huge draw. I hope it keeps going. I think it's got some legs on it because I think word of mouth. I mean, look, let's face it. It's 92. Was it 93%. 93 Rotten Tomatoes. Its rating is 7.8 out of 10. And Metacritic's got it at 81 out of 100.
Yeah, it's very solid.
It's so solid. Everybody likes the movie. Everybody says it's a really good movie.
It's if you're in the mood for this movie, you're going to see it. Mm-hmm. It's not like, I'm in any type of mood, gonna swing whatever way, you're gonna go and see this movie. But if you're like, I want to have this historical you go see this and you're very satisfied.
I agree on that, but I also think that if you just want to go see a good movie and you don't care, you're not interested. I mean, you're not going for a specific kind of movie. I think you'll enjoy this movie. I think if you just want to see a really well-made movie, it's got a good story, and when you come out of there going, wow, I did not know that was interesting.
I think
you'll like this movie.
I think that there's a couple of movies though that are out there right now that have that potential. I think The Martian is very easy to watch, but it has a happier edge to it. So I think you're going to end up obviously people are seeing that way more. On top of that, like, I think Steve Jobs has a very similar appeal where it's already known as a very well-made movie. Mm-hmm. It's just well-made. It's a good movie. And so is this. And I think that that pulls from that. So I'm thinking if you're sitting there and you're going, I just want to see a movie, a good movie that has good reviews. I don't care on the mood.
I'm tired of going to see movies that aren't good. I just want to see a good movie.
Right. Well, this
if you saw Goosebumps, you might feel that way. I didn't see Goosebumps, so that's really rude of me to say, but oops.
But I think it's also the content also. I mean, this is the Cold War. A lot of people are still, in a way, offended by, like, whatever happened.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's a very politically driven type of film as well. So that might be a turnoff, but I think it comes out... If you go into the movie knowing there's a good story behind it.
There's an argument to be made that it's politically driven. I also think that, you know, the people who think that it's past tense, it's history. But if you look at the current climate with all the drones and all the, you know, enemy combatants and how are we going to treat them? Should they have rights like America? All that kind of stuff.
And everything that's going out in the political world right now with people running and having their stance on... Mm-hmm. Whatever issues they might have.
To me, it's very topical in that regard. It's just cloaked in like a spy thriller.
John, are you leading us into political waters? Because I'm going to run out the door.
I would have if I had different people on the panel. But I know it would make you run. So
I
would
just
that.
Be like, politics. Yeah.
All right. So, but
I read
I
about
just
them.
That
I don't talk about
I
them.
I think it's a great way to bring up those issues without, you know, hitting anybody in the head, because it does. I mean, the argument it makes in front of the Supreme Court, it's an argument that can be mm-hmm. made now.
Yeah. It's very easy to make right now.
These prisoners in Guantanamo, what should they, what kind of rights do they deserve and get and should be...
John,
not because,
I don't believe you. You are leading us into political waters.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that how are we going to behave as humans? What are we going to put out there to say, this is who we are, this is what we believe in? And if you don't give rights to those people, what does that say about the Constitution? What does it say about
us as America.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's valuable information, and it's something that should be discussed in the public
it
arena.
It is something that should be discussed, and definitely this will help people have certain ammo for certain viewpoints.
Just not you.
I think it opens up the audience to different perspectives on one certain thing. Mm-hmm. Be like, you can have one situation, but go in with an open mind.
And I think those arguments were well represented, because there were plenty of people that said, no, hang the son of a bitch. Let's see, why are we...
Even the judge.
Even the cop standing on his porch saying, what am I missing here? What are you doing defending these people? And then I thought it was very... The arguments were well laid out.
Yes, I agree. So. I will agree with that. Stop chuckling at me.
I'm just saying that's as far as I'm going to go.
Another little factoid might be random. The Berlin Wall, when they were filming it, they actually built the wall for a quarter mile.
Really? A quarter mile?
A quarter mile, they built the wall.
Wow.
And that was the wall in Warsaw they built. Not Warsaw, excuse me. It was in Poland in some place.
Yeah, it was in Poland where they, you know, actually filmed it. Yeah. But what was also interesting, when they were building it, it was maybe 3 to 4 days before they had the anniversary of taking down the Berlin Wall.
Did anybody go, hey, whoa, what happened in here?
It was a very interesting point during filming.
This better be a movie. I'm not going back.
So they only did a quarter of a mile. So that's it was enough to film.
That must be... I just feel like that would be so hard to build even for a film.
And that's another thing that I loved about this. I don't know what it was like in East Berlin. I don't know anything. You know, I only know the stories. But it just felt like the fact that they were building the wall right in the middle of the street. And, you know, you just ride a bike through here because they hadn't put that. And then 10 minutes later, you come back and, you can't get back.
And now you're rusted.
People freaking out. I mean, it was just, I thought that was terrific.
It was a very interesting component of it that I
And then you see on one side of the wall after it's built, you know, what life is like. And then you see all the, you know,
other side.
The
chaos,
wire. And you're just going, oh, my God.
Yeah. Their depiction of all of that, whether it be just of the public or the people involved, those shots, or if it was the shots more focused on Donovan as he was entering crossings with the trains, all of the different arenas that they portrayed of the wall going up and what was going on. It was a lot.
It's great. It's great to watch.
I thought so. Mm-hmm. So we got a few more minutes left. What else haven't we covered? We barely talked about editing, but we all like the transitions. And I honestly didn't mind the length. I don't know anybody that's really complained about it. I'm sure somebody does, because it's over 2 hours, 2 hours and 20 minutes, or whatever it is.
Yeah, this was filmed in 59 days, the same amount as Saving Private Ryan.
I would like to rewatch this movie to find out more about the subtle things. Yeah. I think there's a lot... especially in things like the transitions.
Yeah.
I think that they say something and they're there for a reason. And some of them I was catching, but they go by, you know, it's transition. It goes quickly. And sometimes you don't have time to process what it actually meant. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of rewatchability in those factors there that I'm sure there's things that I didn't catch in this round in the production design, in the dialogue. I think that watching this once, this is a movie that I would want to watch again to see kind of the art and the detail that they put into it.
For not only that, but there's also, because it's a dialogue driven movie, there's a lot of dialogue, and there's a lot of things that are unsaid that you have to kind of suss out, because you know the part of his job as a negotiator, he even says, is you're the one that's got to feel them out. So there's a lot of that happening, so there's a lot of subtlety too.
I liked how they had the film now, especially since the wall is down and it's kind of settled, but this isn't the first time they tried making this film.
I found this a great story too. Go ahead.
Like back in 1965, Gregory Peck actually tried to buy the rights to this story, and he got Alec Guinness to agree to play Abel.
And he was going to play Donovan.
And Gregory Peck was going to play Donovan, but MGM turned it down. They thought it was like too sensitive, especially at that time back in 1965.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with that.
Yeah.
Everything.
It would have been so topical. I mean, 62 was Fantastic Powers, Big Pig, the whole thing. And it was like, damn, get on it. Yeah, that would have been nice, but they weren't as...
It was a little too close to the relevant time, so they shelved it until now.
It would have been really interesting if they had made that then.
I mean, that's true.
Don't you think that would have been fascinating? I mean, it's like Zero Dark Thirty that was written, how many years after?
Yeah, not that long ago.
Yeah, when they got scrawned. That's true. You never know, I guess.
Yeah, and Gregory Peck and Alec Guinness, not a bad cast there.
No, it's a great cast.
So, would have been fun.
Interesting. But you didn't have Spielberg to do it.
Yeah, but I mean, we. Who knows?
Gregory Peck's amazing.
We could have had all kinds of good directors then.
True. I think it would have been a completely different film now.
Right. Sure. But who knows? Torn Curtain would have been more like that. Who knows? I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But fascinating story.
All right, we got to get out of here. So, what are our last thoughts? Any last words we have?
I think that this is a movie well worth watching in which Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg both live up to their reputations.
They do.
If you're looking to see what makes them great, this is a great movie that illustrates that. If you're looking for the most uplifting thing in the world, it's not going to find it, but it is intellectually stimulating. It makes you think, and it's well made. So for all those reasons, worth watching.
Yeah, I enjoy this film. I don't know much about the Cold War, but I know a little bit more coming out of this. And I think it's good to have another American type of story that came out in a positive light that Americans now should still know even the history of everything that goes on with everybody else.
Did it pique your interest enough to want to know more?
Yeah, absolutely.
She did all the research.
Not on the politics side. Fascinating.
But, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I like to watch them probably in movie form versus, like, if this was a book, I probably wouldn't read it.
Yeah.
Well, this film was based on a book, Berlin, Portrait
Couple
of a
books,
City.
Yeah.
Yeah, if one of them.
Yeah, I liked watching
what was the
film
books?
Portrait of a City Through the Centuries.
And Donovan wrote a book himself, Donovan, for Strangers on a Bridge. There's the Case of Colonel Abel and Francis Carey Powers. There's also Bridge of Spies, A True Story of the Cold War, 2010 by Giles Whittle.
Yeah. And Operation Overflight, a memoir of the U2.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of different.
And there was a 1970. I love this. It was a 1976 TV movie about Francis Gary Powers. James Gregory played Donovan, and then you know who played Francis Gary Powers? You may not remember this person, but I'll say it anyway. Lee Majors, who was the $6 million man.
Really? I know.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fascinating facts from Anatomy of a Movie.
All right.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Where can they find you, Sarah?
Sarah,
I'm fanning to Marissa.
You can follow me on Twitter at SarafiniTV.
And Sarah
Slubhub. I have one now.
You have what?
Is it
Sarah Slubhub or is
No, but I should
isn't
make
it
one called Sarah Slubhub.
Okay, what is yours, Sarah?
No, mine is Sarah _ Stretton.
Look at that. And Stretton, Stretton.
Yeah, there we go.
There
go. I have
Stretton.
One of
Sarah
those now.
_ Stretton.
Yeah.
Yep.
Say it again because it's the first time they haven't heard it.
I know. I said it once last week.
Oh, did you?
Okay. But it's the first time you've heard it. I'm sharing it with you.
Same for me. Thank you.
And all of the Bridge of Spies watchers out there.
Okay.
Welcome
to
the 20th.
I don't have one. The only place you can find me is right here next time on Anatomy of a Movie. Thanks again. We'll talk to you next time.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.